Radio Cavalè, your anarchist radio.
Hey, Radio Cavalè.
Hey.
Hey. What's up? I'm Santeria.
And I'm Mitchell. Hi.
Hey. We're Radio Cavalè.
Yep. And what do we got?
Wow, we got loads of good stuff. We got lots of great tunes. We have global and local updates. We have an interview with Beehive Collective.
Yes, we do, yes.
That'd be kick-ass. We have an interview, some of you may have heard, about the Montreal student strike that's like also being called the Maple Spring. In reference to the Arab Spring and stuff. So we have an interview with one of the more radical student unions called ASSE from Montreal, which would be cool.
Yeah, and then we've got an interview with Ken and Boris, who are two folks who have been involved with the May Day campaigns that have been happening this week.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah, and then we have some upcoming events, and we have a little piece about Sacco and Vanzetti for our sort of history. We also have a piece that we're going to pop in there as well, but about Howard Zinn talking about the Ludlow strike, which is also quite interesting bit of sort of labour history, given that it's May Day, well, not May Day today, but the month of May.
Yes, but we're thinking about workers, that's what we're doing now.
Yeah, celebrating all day.
Of course. Yeah. Always, yes. So now we're going to go to a song, Feeling Good by Nina Simone.
I love this song. It makes me feel good every morning. I do.
You know how I feel. My head and cry. Sun in the sky, you know how I feel. Breeze drifting on by, you know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me, yeah. It's a new dawn, it's a new day. It's a new life for me. Ooh, 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 ooh. And I'm feeling good. Fish in the sea. You know how I feel. River running free. You know how I feel. Blossom on the tree. You know how I feel. It's a new dawn. It's a new day. It's a new life for me. And I'm feeling good. Dragonfly out in the sun, you know what I mean, don't you know? Butterflies all having fun, you know what I mean? Sleep in peace when day is done, that's what I mean. And this old world is a new world, and a bold world for me. When you shine, you know how I feel. Scent of the pine, you know how I feel. The freedom is mine, and I know how I feel. It's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for me.
Okay, that was awesome. And now we're going to go to some global updates, a bit of this and that, that I've got from the old interweb. Some stuff still happening of course, to do with the No TAV, there was a, at the end of last month, a bunch of folk went to confront some more construction workers, and that seems to be something that's happening quite a lot. So I think where they were at, I'm not reading this, I'm sorry, so I can't remember exactly, but it was a bit of a walk, like, over a mountain, apparently, so it was, like, 100 or 200 folks who sort of all, like, trudged along together to get to this, like, point where all these, like, construction workers were and all the police were waiting for them and whatnot. So fucking great. But also there was... we mentioned this in the last show about how some activists set fire. They set fire? Yeah. Set fire to some of the, like, train cables and things like that in solidarity with No TAV activists. And this has happened again on the 25th of March. People have started a fire to the electrical wires of a telephone exchange, and with the words No TAV and Sol and Bellino Live, along with two No TAV flags. And Sol and Bellino are two anarchists who were accused of acts of eco-terrorism in relation to No TAV in the early 1990s, and they've both committed suicide in prison. Oh. Which is fucking awful. So that is happening at the moment. And also I saw, unrelated in awesomeness, but I did happen to read about how, like, a some art, what do you call them, like, people who run art galleries, curators or whatever,
yes, yeah.
To do with the cuts, this is his, like, form of activism, because he's so outraged at the cuts in going to public art and what have you, he's burning three artworks a week that are in the museum or in the gallery or whatever, and it's causing a big stir, obviously, which is hilarious because, mm-hmm. like, the concept of, like, art and, you know, the history of, like, what art means to working class people and people without money and things like that. It's quite amusing that he's all, like, outraged and burning his artwork when people don't have houses and jobs and things like that. So, yeah. Well done, that guy.
But it is an interesting comment, like, sort of the burning of those kinds of things. Like, it reminds me very much of what the Nazis did and that sort of form of social cleansing, and in some ways cutting the arts and cutting, like, even though arts isn't the arts, in quotation, isn't necessarily accessible to people, it's almost like a form of social cleansing as well, of, like, that sort of creativity, that those... that part of society that sort of works on creativity and things, I guess.
Yeah, better people better. Who we allocate to be creative and respect their creativity, yeah.
Yeah, instead of the creativity and the hard work of people that make everything in this world, the people who build the bridges and things.
Yes. In Palestine, people might have heard about the hunger strikes that are happening in prison. I'm just going to read... I've just got a few sentences here that I'm just going to read from the Schnooze website titled Running on Empty. Schnooze is great. I love it.
What were you saying? They're puntastic.
They're puntastic, yes. So pressure is rising against the Israeli prison service, IPS, as thousands of Palestinian detainees embark on a third week of open-ended hunger strike in protest at their treatment behind bars. The prisoner rights group, Adamir, estimates there are currently 2,000 detainees engaged in hunger strike. That's fucking huge! 2,000! That's fucking huge! Yeah. With the figure expected to rise beyond 3,000 during the coming weeks. All bar one of Israeli prisoners are within Israel itself, which violates international law as Palestinian detainees are transferred to locations inside the occupying power's territory. Adamir says this also constitutes a war crime. There needs to be a targeted and concerted campaign from the international activists to ensure the issue of both Palestinian hunger strikers and the ill treatment of detainees by the Israeli prison service does not go unheard, and that amazing sacrifices of the prisoners are not in vain. Fucking amazing. Mm-hmm. 3,000 people hunger striking. That's
quite something. Because I think that's, like, a significant portion of the number of Palestinians that are actually in prison as well. So it's like, that's quite a large portion of prisoners that are sort of outraged and acting up, you know.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah, largely around their conditions of, like, not having access to their families and I think something else, which I've forgotten.
I'm not quite sure, but yeah.
Probably just general shit treatment, I'd say. there's a squatted school in Portugal that's just been closed down, which had a violent eviction. ISCOLA, which is an acronym and in English translates into self-managed space, was an abandoned school that community people had taken over, and then they started doing different things, bike workshops, languages, things like that, and what have you, seemed really great. On 19th of April, City Hall decided to violently evict Iskola, leading to 3 arrests in response to the 25th of April, the same day of the national celebration of the 1974 Carnation Revolution against their fascist dictatorship. Thousands took the streets and reoccupied the school. However, the next day police promptly closed it down once again, and this time destroying essential building features. Apparently, like with other things I was reading on that, people have started to reorganise new spaces, and that a lot of people were involved, and it was like a bit of a social centre and like sort of a education hub. So, you know, what's the old cliche? Knock down the buildings, something.
Oh, but you can't
take the ideas.
Yeah,
or something.
You can take the building, you can't take the spirit, or something.
Something like that. Yeah.
Something cheesy, but that you see, you're kind of like, yeah, it's kind of true.
But works.
Yeah. Totally.
And you know, it wouldn't be right to mention news without the word occupy. And so there's a new thing now called occupying farms. This is what we do. We're not in the city no more.
Not the prisons, not the franchises. Farms, you're talking about the land.
So following on from the eviction of USA's Occupy movement, a new strategy is taking roots in the San Francisco area on the Berkeley-Albany border. On the 22nd of April, hundreds of local residents, farmers, students and activists entered the UC Berkeley-owned Gill Tract, which contains the last 5 acres of prime agricultural land in the East Bay. All set up with 1,000 seedlings, chickens and tools, started to toil the land, and 4 hours into the occupation they had succeeded in planting 3/4 of an acre. This occupation isn't about setting up protest camps, but about reclaiming land in an effort for self-sustainability through community food production. The community has gotten tired of the ever-increasing influence of private interests on the University of California's decisions. For around a decade, the land has been used for research funded through investments by Novartis, Signet, BP and others who don't give a toss about the local community. Now the Gill Tract has been slated for development, and the company most likely to buy it is Whole Foods Corporation.
How's that? Whole Foods, which is also known as Fresh and Wild, I think they've rebranded as Whole Foods, I believe.
I don't know. But,
potentially.
They used to be in Bristol, didn't they?
Yeah, they weren't making enough money here.
But that was the place where you could go get the salad. Is that the one?
Potentially, in the
where
centre.
Where the Tills were, like, away from the salad bar or something.
Yes, the Tills were very far from the salad bar. Yes.
I've heard of this place. Yes. Yeah, so that's happening as well. It was supported by La Via Campesina.
La Via Campesina, yeah.
Yeah, which is an international peasants' movement to do with farm workers.
Oh, part of Brazil's movement of landless workers and things.
Yes. So that seems positive. That's a good use of the word occupy.
Yes, that is a good use of the word occupy.
I feel all right saying it now. That's okay. Mm-hmm. Oh, shit, sorry. Very, very quickly, I just mentioned Turkey just because we're, like, talking about May Day.
Mm.
Turkey's fucking amazing. Holy shit. I was checking all the cities, and I even watched a video. I was compelled to watch an activist video after reading this article. But basically, they just totally took to the streets. In the video, there are no police. People are just, like, walking along their little march, and they all have, like, baseball bats and, like, black flags and things like that. And every time they pass, like, they passed banks and McDonald's and ATMs and whatever, or surveillance cameras, they would just get their little bats out, a whole, like, little crew of them, maybe 5, would just, like, come and, like, beat the shit out of something and then go back to their march, keep walking and chanting, and then when they see something else they wouldn't like, they just go and smash up some advertising or smash up some windows somewhere. But that was, like, you know, obviously targeted things, and there was, like, a little guy, like, there was a dude who had, like, a little food van out the front of a McDonald's, and they're all, like, bypassing the food van and, like, going to smash up the McDonald's and stuff. It was just, like, fucking yeah, it was really amazing to watch it. It was just like, wow, they're just going for it. Yeah, so that was cool.
That sounds wicked, yeah.
Yeah, really, really great.
So find great
May
video.
Day. Yeah, have a look at the video. It's very, really, really cool. So yes, that's some of the things that are happening in the world, basically.
Wicked. Great, so, local news. Local news. Bristol, another fantastic pun. Bristol mayhem, 2 high streets attacked, and this is from Indie Media. So on the night of May 1st, a number of targets in 2 different locations were attacked. In Downend, the windows at the ATMs of Lloyds and HSBC were smashed, with the Beasley Hill and St. Andrews estate agents both smashed up as well. On Wells Road in Knowle, the Windows and ATM of NatWest were destroyed, as well as the money shop, Beasley Hill, and Matthews estate agents were also attacked. Whilst May Day once commemorated the lives of anarchists murdered by Chicago State Police, it has now been recuperated by the reformist left into a celebration of the working class. We wish to destroy work, its logic and its content, and no state-sanctioned bank holiday. Party or celebration even begins to touch our hatred of it. The communique goes on. It's a bit longer, so I didn't make note of it all, but you can check it out on Indie Media. Also in Bristol, May Day action against ACSA. So there was a noise demo on Monday, April 30th, which was part of the Bristol Week of Actions for May Day and things, which we'll talk to Ken and Boris a bit more about later. So it just got out of the way and over. So it just got underway, and just over a dozen activists visited two ACSA offices in the city to protest the company's involvement in the cruel vivisection industry. And also, after the London May Day trade union march, up to 300 people took part in a roving anti-workfare demo with a banner reading, "Workfare is stealing your jobs." Which is kind of a good statement of fact. Correct. Shutting down various branches of McDonald's, Greggs, Topshop, BHS, Hollands and Barrett, and others, including Boots, Pizza Hut, and more along Oxford Street and beyond. The protest was called by the London Solidarity Federation and also supported by Occupy London. The final destination for Occupy London was to take Paternoster Square until the police cleared it just after 11 p.m. And also, I thought we could just have a little bit of chat about the the March for England in Brighton, which is...
Yes.
Yeah. So I hear that was quite successful.
Yeah, it was really good. There's been some really really good articles and lots of good footage and stuff. And it was a fucking circus. It was great. You know, people didn't step up for a little bit and then people stepped up. It was great. Cool. There was like all sorts of shit going on. But I think what made it like even better was just like the fact that it was in Brighton and then the cops had to sort of change the route of the march at the last second. So then we ended up going down some side streets and confronting people, sipping their lattes and out, because it was quite a lovely day as well, a really nice day. And so people were out, like, with their kids, and they, you know, it would be like, you would be a metre away from a child eating an ice cream who's, like, just standing around near a cafe, and then there's, like, bottles being thrown and all this sort of stuff, so it was, like, this kind of cool, like, cultural clash. But, yeah, it was really brilliant. The cops were, yeah... fucking ridiculous, but that's expected. Like, actually, I suppose, like, historically, people will talk about police protecting fascists, but it's like, literally, you are protecting fascists. Like, yeah. They form just a constant kettle around the fascists. Mm-hmm. So it was good, because then there was no, like, preemptive kettling, I think, which happened last year, because people were sort of, like, lined the streets quite thinly, but there was a lot of, like, anti-fascist folk and other random people. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and they walked to their little pen, which they couldn't get inside, and then people just yelled at them for 2 hours, and then they turned around and went back to the train station. It was really good.
Good. Yes, that sounds good. And also, as we speak, there's EDL march in Luton, I believe. There's people out there resisting and sort of fighting that. It's a bit harder. Perhaps Luton doesn't have the same culture of resistance to the EDL and things, but hopefully it can spark a little bit. And it's just good to show them the EDL, that, you know, their presence will be noticed and opposed wherever they go.
Yeah. Yeah, they were pretty pissed about Brighton. So, I think June the 2nd there's going to be another March for England in Brighton. So, and then they're also coming to Bristol and, you know, doing the rounds, so.
God, man.
Yeah.
They have nothing better to do.
I know. Wave your stupid little flag.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah, I think that's everything.
Great, so now we're going to go to a track by, it's called Ill Manners by Plan B. Check it out.
Let's all go on an urban safari, we might see some illegal migrants. Oi, look, there's a chap, that means council has done violent. He's got a hoodie on, give him a hug. And second thoughts, don't
you don't wanna get mugged. Oh shit, too late, that was kinda dumb. Whose idea was that? Stupid. He's got some fun. Able you, be the joker, play the fool. It's politics, ain't it all? Smoke and mirrors, April Fools. All year round, all in all, just another brick in the wall. Get away with murder in the schools. Use four letter swear words cause we're cool. All drinkers, drug takers. Every single one of us runs the herb. Keep on believing what you read in the papers. Count to a stake, it's gone with the herb. Thinking of a life on the count to a state is from a thing you ever read about it or heard. But it's all true, so stay with your safest. There's no need to step out the verb. Truth is here, we're all disturbed. We cheat and lie, it's so absurd. Feed the fear, that's what we've learned. Fuel the fire, let it burn.
Oi, I said oi. What you looking at, you little rich boy? We're poor, ran here, run home and lock your door. Don't come at me no more, you could get my phone. Real, yeah, because my mind is ill. My mind is ill. For real, yeah, you know my mind is ill. My mind is ill.
You could get lost in this concrete jungle. New bills keep springing up out of nowhere. Take the wrong turn down a one-way junction. Find yourself in the hood, nobody goes there. We got an eco-friendly government. They preserve our natural habitat. Built an entire Olympic village around where we live about. Pulling down any flats, give us free money and we don't pay any tax. NHS healthcare, yes please, many thanks. People get stabbed round here, there's many shanks. Nice knowing someone's got a back when we get attacked. Don't bloody give me that, I lose my temper. Who closed down the community centre? I killed time there, used to be a member. What will I do now till September? School's out, rules out, get your bloody tools out. London's burning. I predict a riot, falling, fall out. Who knows what it's all about? What did that chief say? Something about the Kaisers, kids on the street. Now they never miss a beat, never miss a cheap thrill when it comes their way. Let's go looting, no not looting. The high street's closer, cover your face. And if we see any rich kids on the way, we'll make them wish they stayed inside. There's a charge for congestion, everybody's gotta pay. Do what Boris does, rob them blind.
Oi, I said oi. What you looking at, you little rich boy?
Politicians, you bloody rich kids never listen. There's no such thing as broken Britain. We're just bloody broke in Britain. What needs fixing is the system. Not shop windows down and breaks the riots on the television. You can't put a fool in prison.
Okay, wow, pretty good song, eh?
That was a tune.
Indeed, it was a tune. Great.
Cool. We're going to go to an interview with the Beehive Collective, who are really amazing. I just have so much respect for this group. Like, they're an artist collective who basically tour around different points of, like, resistance, and they did... People might know their work from doing stuff around like coal mining and mountaintop removal, which they did in South America? America? Appalachia, where's that?
Appalachia, which is in the United States, yeah.
Which is in the US, yes. And yeah, fucking amazing, absolutely amazing artwork. So like working collectively, and then they tour so they work individually with like groups, different groups that are involved in resisting whatever it is, so mm-hmm. in this case, like mountaintop removal and how it's affecting sort of people in those communities. And so they like talk to people, like they get the history on like mining and what like conditions were and like all the like workers' struggles from, you know, since basically like colonization, and mm-hmm. teeing up and like working with a lot of like indigenous groups to get their stories and all this sort of stuff. So like incredible amounts of research, and then the posters that they make are just so detailed that they're just amazing. It's kind of like, and this is in no way an artistic comparison, but it's kind of like Where's Wally? You know when you look at a Where's Wally, it's like, whoa, there is so much going on in this poster. Mm-hmm. Like, where do I start? Like,
do you mean Where's Waldo?
Oh, yes, I mean, where's Waldo? Yeah. And it's like, where's Wally in Hollywood? And then there's, like, all these different scenes and people doing different things with movies and stuff like that. It's like that, but obviously a million times better.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and the drawings are really fantastic as well. Sorry, I could just go on and on and on. But I was reading about... because I have one of their posters, which I won at a raffle, and they give you, like, a little book to explain the drawings, and... it goes into all the research that they did, and they talk a lot about, like, mountaintop removal and why it's really, really fucking shit. And, you know, just reading that booklet and looking at the work, it's just like, fuck, you know, I felt really... like, I really wanted to find out some, like, if there was, like, actions that we could talk about, like, recent news that I could, like, mention on the show. But I couldn't really find a lot of stuff, but, like, I had a look at a couple of different websites for, like, Indigenous groups in those areas. And it's just, like, fucking amazing, like, these... how people are just working in solidarity with, like, a lot of different groups there. It's just, yeah, reading this booklet about, like, the history of those struggles and stuff is just really inspiring and also really fucking depressing. It's just, like, yeah, they really touch on a lot of different stuff around greenwashing particularly, and how it's just, yeah, total bullshit. And it's just, I don't know, that same thing always. I think I mention this, like, every show. It's like, gets me fucking angry and I just don't know what to do. And it's just like, ah, I want to, like, punch someone in the face. Like, who are these people? I want to hit them. But is that the right response? I don't know. But I just get really mad.
Understandable.
But anyway, I spoke to this woman, Emma, who's been drawing with them for quite a while and has been, like, touring around and stuff. So we'll go to that interview now. Okay, I'm here with Emma from the Beehive Collective. How are you going?
We're doing good. It's been a beautiful spring over here in the States. So.
Oh, lovely. So I'm really interested in the collective that you're involved in, and also the projects that you do and how you work on those projects. So can you just tell me how the group got started?
Yeah, well, the Beehive, you know, we just, like, celebrated our 10th anniversary this past year.
Yeah.
So we've been around for a while, and we've grown and changed a lot over those 10 years. We started actually as a stone mosaics cooperative.
Wow.
We were a group of women and trans folks who were doing public installations of murals. And we kind of came out of the birth of the anti-globalization movement in the U.S., kind of out of the Battle of Seattle in 1999 is where we got a lot of our energy. It originally started as, like, an intentional community and this mosaics project, but at the same time, the folks who were involved were very involved with the anti-globalization efforts in the U.S., and were doing some graphic work and illustration for a lot of issues around biotechnology. And then in 2000, we got commissioned to make a poster for the Quebec protests, the Quebec City protests, and... really kind of took on making a big poster to protest the Free Trade Area of the Americas initiative in the United States that was going on in the Western Hemisphere. And it actually took us a few years. That's when we started our journey of making graphics that take forever to finish.
Yeah.
Actually didn't have it finished until the protest. We had, like, a rough draft that we published in 2000, but then had a finished draft that was easier to see and a little bit more visually interesting by 2003 for the big protests in Miami. And people's response to that was just incredible. Like, we blew the graphic up and printed it on these giant banners so that people could see them and we could have them in the street, actually. Because we designed them not just to be a poster that you would, like, pull down off of a wall and throw away after the event's over. We wanted it to be a souvenir, a teaching tool, something that people would want to take and keep and use to explain to people why they were going to the streets of Miami and being threatened with police violence. You know? And, people's response to it was amazing. Like, on the street, that's kind of when we birthed the other half of what we do, which is this storytelling aspect where, you know, we had these huge banners and people just kept coming up to us and asking us what the image was about. And so we started doing these impromptu what we call picture lectures by using the pictures and the graphic to explain the content of the Free Trade Area of the Americas and why people were there protesting it. And from there, it just kind of expanded. You know, people responded so well to that graphic that we then decided to make one that wasn't going to be based on an event, but was specifically going to try to push the graphic to look at a policy issue. And we explored the drug war in Colombia with our second graphic that came out in 2002 called Plan Colombia. And we kind of added another element to our work then by actually doing on-the-ground first-hand research in Colombia to make sure that we weren't just hearing the stories from academics and activists, but actually talking with folks who were first-hand impacted and had the information. And from then, we just kept expanding and expanding the and trying to push the limits of graphic teaching ability, I guess.
Yeah.
Because people have just been responding to it so well.
Yeah, they're amazing, absolutely amazing images. Like, they are truly, like, breathtaking. The detail is incredible. How do people even, like, collectively draw something that looks so unified?
Oh, it's very challenging. I won't say it's easy.
Yeah.
One of the reasons why it takes us so long. And, like, each graphic has become more collaborative and more intricate, so it's kind of increased the production time.
Yeah.
Because now, like, pretty much every major graphic that we've done, we've released a few smaller ones, but, like, the big narrative graphics usually take about 2 years or more.
Holy moly. Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very intricate choreography of, you know, not just illustrators working together, but also researchers and educators and designers. Like for our recent graphic, The True Cost of Coal, we had 10 people who worked on that with a variety of skill sets that all came together.
Yeah, wow. And
we had 10 folks on the research trip in the Appalachian Mountains of the U.S. Talking with people being impacted by mountaintop removal. And kind of first we always work with like the research and the layout and design before we start drawing. We have a pretty good sense of where everything's going on the page and what's happening. And so that really helps make the illustration a little bit easier because we've already agreed pretty much to the content.
Yeah.
And then so it kind of happens in phases of production and research and layout. And then we actually start putting pen to paper and doing the final drawing. And for the Cole poster, the pre-production time, like the research and the design, really took about a year and a half, and then the illustration also took about a year and a half.
Wow, it's incredible, like, to even think that a poster, like, takes that long. But you can understand, looking at the poster, that it would definitely take that long. A lot of people I know have the posters, or, you know, variations of the posters in their homes, and every time I see them, it's just like, you notice something different, or you just see something new every time. Like, see a different animal doing something cool. It's just, it's amazing that in its entirety it's something, but then individually it's also something as well. So it's just incredible, the stories. I got one at a coal benefit when I first moved to Bristol, and all the posters, they were like raffle prizes, but the posters were rolled up with the image on the inside, so you couldn't actually see. And there were all these prizes that you could choose, and I was one of the first people that won the prizes. And the person was saying, okay, well, we've got these posters and we've got all this soap and we've got this other stuff that you can choose. And the guy was saying, like, I stress how good these posters are. You can't see them, but if you win, you should get this poster. You don't know how good they are, but they're really, really good. And, like, was really trying to stress them. And then I won and I was like, well, I don't know what to get. And I was standing up there for ages and my friends were yelling at me, get the poster. Yeah. And then I got it home and it was just, like, incredible. And how you can fold it in different ways, like a Mad magazine.
Yeah.
Freaking rad. That's just, it's amazing.
Yeah,
really
we were
good.
Really excited when we came up with
Great. And you've mentioned a little bit about, like, the project that you're working on at the moment. Can you just tell me about, like, go into more detail about why you chose the most recent poster and what the research has what research you've done and the people that you've spoken to get that project off the ground?
Yeah, well, it's funny because the Mesoamerica poster is both our most recent poster and one of our older posters because we actually started it in 2003 when we went on the research trip. And we had another team of about 10 folks who went and traveled the route of this infrastructure plan that is going to stretch from Puebla, Mexico, which is like right on the border of the states, all the way down to, actually it's been expanded into Colombia. It used to just stop at Panama, and now it's expanded into Colombia too. And it's basically the modernization, quote unquote, or the industrialization is more appropriate, of the Mesoamerican subcontinent. It's, you know, trying to create the industrial corridor that allows free trade to happen in the Western Hemisphere, because there's all these resource centers in, you know, Central America and South America, but there's a real limited amount of infrastructure to get those resources to the places, the industrial production zones. So there's, like, huge highway developments that are spanning you know, north and south, and also east and west, huge dry canal projects that are happening, that are trying to circumvent the Panama Canal,
yep.
that are trying to have resources go from, you know, from the west to huge production centers in China, and then put those, you know, send the products to Europe and the United States for consumption.
Yep.
So it's just this huge forceful shove into this industrialization process for areas of the Western Hemisphere that haven't had that happen yet. You know, it's everything from huge hydroelectric dam projects to mega highways to huge free trade zones that are just building, like, assembly factories so that, you know, the resources get shipped out and then parts come from China and people work on assembling them in, like, Honduras, and they ship them somewhere else. So it's just going to radically transform this area of the world, which is a very important biological and biodiversity area. Specifically, it's like Mesoamerica is where South and, you know, North America meet, and their species diversification there is incredible, and it's a really important migratory area for animals that travel north and south. So this is going to be a huge disruption to the ecosystem, and also to many, many, you know, folks who live traditionally on the land there.
Yeah.
So it's just going to be a huge change, and we learned about it in 2003 when it was kind of just getting started. And one of the reasons we chose it is because a lot of people hadn't heard about it, and we wanted to help bring attention to it. And since then, that, you know, the activism around it, both in Mesoamerica and North America, has kind of waxed and waned, and it's undergone a lot of transformations. It kind of got broken up from one big, huge plan into a bunch of smaller plans. So, like, organizing around it has become a little bit more challenging. But and the poster that we started drawing to kind of represent the complexity of this issue ended up turning into this. It became so complex, we actually joke about it and call it the story of the world.
Yeah.
Because it encompasses, you know, it goes from colonization of the Western Hemisphere all the way to economic globalization today, and talks about climate refugees. And over the 7 years that we've made it, you know, so much of the story has changed, especially with the invent of carbon credits and carbon sequestration and the carbon market.
Yeah.
So we've actually incorporated a pretty big climate change theme into this graphic.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know, it's hard to explain how complex it is, just because it's another two-sided poster, so it's got a front that has a whole story about colonization and kind of the bad news of what's going on, and then you open it up, it kind of swings open like a triptych, like barn doors, and opens up into a rectangle, and then you have two times as good, as much good news as bad news. That was one critique that we were getting with our posters, is that we would always focus too much on the bad news.
Yeah.
So we were really trying to focus on the stories of resistance this time. And so when you open it up, we have documented all the different things that the communities that we visited in 2003 are doing to try to prevent this plan. Everything from stopping and intervening in military expansion to, you know, solidarity economies, small economies, anti-tourist work, you know, climate change work, water preservation, all sorts of different things are illustrated on the inside. And we don't joke when we say that it could be a textbook for any globalization class in any university anywhere, because it's got so much information in it.
Yeah, wow, it sounds incredible. When will that poster be ready?
Well, we've been very afraid to give any dates about it, because we've been giving dates and missing them for very many years. So I'm not going to say for sure, but we are moving along very quickly.
Okay.
We have one whole front of it is finished. We're working on the inside, and it's going along really well. We have 5 people in the studio in Maine right now who are working hard.
Yeah.
So I think it'll be done very soon, shall we say. And I don't know. I don't know what we're going to do when it's done. It's hard to imagine it being done.
Yeah.
It's been kind of magnum opus that's encompassed most of our life. And it's going to be amazing when it's finished, and we're going to celebrate with a lot of touring.
Yeah, great.
Take the graphic back to Mesoamerica, because we always try to give, like, half of our production, like our print production, back to the communities who helped us make it.
Yeah, fantastic.
And then, try to just get it out there in the world. We're thinking about doing a border tour in the United States and really trying to connect it with immigration rights struggles now, and just connect it with that issue, because it's a very vibrant and pertinent issue in the U.S. right now. So
yeah, great. Did you want to add anything? or say anything?
Yeah, actually, I can't believe I had forgotten to tell you this in our email correspondence. It's probably because it wasn't confirmed until just like a few days ago. But we actually are going to have a team of folks coming over to Europe this June. We had been invited to participate in this art exhibition called Manifesta.
Oh, yeah.
Happening in northern Belgium. And we're exhibiting our work there, and also they're helping us get like send one person across the ocean to represent our work at this big exhibit.
Wow.
And then because they were so nice to help us pay for our plane ticket, we're going to stay around for a little while.
Cool.
So we're actually going to be doing some small amount of touring in Europe at the beginning of June, and we're looking for folks who might be interested in hosting some workshops or presentations, and if anyone out there is interested in that, give us a contact, or give us a holler, and you know, can contact us through our website, which is just beehivecollective.org, and our information's right there. And
awesome.
We would be very excited to come and share our work in person in your community.
So you're just looking for people who have access to a space that you could come in and exhibit?
Yep, and we go to all sorts of different venues, from coffee shops to house shows to schools to camps, outdoors.
Yeah.
We're pretty flexible and can meet people's needs where they're at, and we're just excited to come over and learn more about what's going on with fossil fuel issues in Europe and share our work and use of cross-pollinating, which is what we do.
Yeah, you should totally come to Bristol. You should definitely come to Bristol. I'll try and make that happen.
Awesome. I'll put you in touch with the lady who's coming. Her name is Zeth, and I'll just put you both in touch via email.
Yeah, that'd be awesome. I'm quite involved with a couple of community centres, so it'd be brilliant to get your... A lot of people, yeah, like I was saying, a lot of my mates have your posters, and people are interested in, like, visual arts and politics and things like that, so it'd be definitely a good connection, for sure. Cool. Well, that's all from me. Did you want to add anything else?
Oh, I think that's pretty good.
Okay, cheers.
Yeah, thank you so much for having us on your show. We really appreciate it.
No, my pleasure.
Wicked, so that was a great interview, and now we're going to go to, I can't quite remember the name of the song, but I think it's Down Presser. It's Sinead O'Connor did basically like a reggae covers album and stuff like this. Down Presser was originally made by Peter Tosh, and so I really love the album, but I tried to choose a song that didn't have too much reference to Jah and Rastafari, because guessing that this is an anarchist radio show, our listenership may not appreciate that.
That's true.
I still think there is a good... how do you say, good spirit of resistance and anti-colonialism stuff to be appreciated in some of that music. But yeah, Sinead O'Connor, beautiful
voice.
She's
awesome.
Yeah.
She's so good.
Yeah, she's great.
She's done some cool stuff. I won't mention it now, maybe later.
But. Yes. But yeah, so we're going to go to that song now.
Down presser.
Great. So, I wish I could sing like that. And now we're going to go to an interview with, well, some of you may have heard, there's been massive, it's been kicking off big time in Montreal. There's been major demonstrations the past little while. Earth Day was a big one. Anti-police brutality day, March 15th was another big one. There's been massive protests for quite a while now in Montreal, because they want to raise the tuition fees there to nowhere near as high as here, but it's still a massive increase and people are resisting it. And ASSE is one of these student groups that's sort of a big organizing body there and stuff like that. They've been the Premier of Quebec has put a plan saying he wants to increase tuition fees by 75% within the next 5 years. And ASSE went back to the table and told him, "Yo, dude, we want to abolish tuition fees within 5 years." So I think that's cool. Yeah,
it's a conflict. That's what that is. That's an old-fashioned conflict.
I think they're at an impasse, right? So I mean, we'll see what happens with that one. But I mean, it's just been a massive uprising. People are it's kicking off, and it's things are sort of coming together. They're calling it the Maple Spring. So we'll see what comes of it, and we're going to go to that interview now. Great, so now we're back, and we're going to go to a song called La Rage by Kenny Arcana. This is like a bit of an oldie but a goodie that sort of never gets old for me. I love it when I listen to it. I feel the rage that she talks about, and it's a good song.
Jusqu'au bout et là on veut bien nous mener la vie. On pourra plus taire ni s'asseoir, dorénavant on tiendra prêt, parce qu'on a la rage, le cœur.
Okay, and we're back.
Mm-hmm.
And now we're going to go to an interview slash chit-chat with Ken and Boris, who are going to be chatting to us about May Day. They know some stuff about May Day and workers' things and such, so we'll hear what they have to say now.
Hey there, we're here with Ken and Boris. Hey guys.
Hello.
Hey, I hope you guys aren't too bitter. You've made up after yesterday and things.
We're doing alright.
Yeah, it's alright. I mean, I'm better than him, so that's fine.
Cool, so May Day, eh?
Yeah, it's been pretty good. So, what's been going on? We kind of organised, like, well, I say we, a group of people organised a week of different events, just based around May Day, try and get things moving around May Day. Nothing's really happened for, what, like 10 years now in Bristol?
Nothing of note, yeah.
So, yeah, we've tried in the past to get things organised, and it's always quite a struggle, mainly because you're not allowed, like, people are in work on May Day. So, yeah, we've got a few different groups involved, and people did different things on each day of the week, and it's gone quite well.
Yeah, what kind of stuff has been going on for the sort of the week of action around May Day?
Well, one of the things we wanted to do was try and make the point that all the separate struggles, or seemingly separate struggles we're fighting, are all linked together. So we tried to bring in as many groups as we could on board. So, for instance, the first action on the Monday, the day before May Day, was an anti-vivisection action with some animal rights activists. And it got some people along to that wouldn't normally go on an animal rights activist type thing. And so that was really cool. And that was a relatively successful noise demo we had against AXA. And they told us we were being really annoying, which I think is awesome. Pretty much a success.
Great.
It's kind of the point. They didn't seem to realise that.
That's good.
Being annoying.
It's like practice with your siblings and start with corporations.
Yeah, and then Tuesday, so May Day itself, we just had a stall in the city centre. We wanted to do something bigger, but because a lot of people were in work, unfortunately, it was hard to get the numbers together. So we went for a stall and just publicising the history of May Day, you know, with mentions of the Haymarket affair. That went quite well, decent turnout for that, and a lot of people, kind of passers-by, came and spoke to us, and I think that's, like, it's a really important thing to do. You can go and do your demos and things, but at the end of the day, like, we need to kind of engage with the people out there on the street, so that worked for doing that, I think.
And do you feel like you had some good chats with folks and things?
Yeah, a few people. We sort of timed it to try and get people coming out of work.
Mm-hmm.
A couple of new people, new faces, that said they were going to come along to the main march on the Saturday, which is really good. But a lot of people just don't really know about May Day, apart from it being a bank holiday. So it was good that we had some... we made a lot of flyers, I think like 800 flyers, and we gave almost all of them out. So that's just sort of spreading the history of the original meaning behind May Day as sort of like a worker struggle.
Yeah.
And I just want to shout out to the school kids who just walked straight up to us, asked for a leaflet, asked what everything was about, and we just got into a conversation with them, and they're like, oh, worker struggle, you mean like for like more money and stuff? And we're like, yeah, and like better conditions and this and that. And we got a thing about the NHS on Saturday, and they just came straight out with, yeah, I've always thought, like, if we weren't wasting all that money buying weapons to go to Afghanistan, we'd have plenty of money for the NHS. And then we were like, yeah, so we're gonna have like a march on Saturday for like saving the NHS. And they're like, oh, it should be more like an angry mob. And we're like, yes, it should be more like an angry mod. And then they were like, yeah, basically fuck the government. And I was like, you've restored my faith in like the next generation of children. Like, these kids were like 12. Yeah, that was pretty wicked. Made my May Day, really.
Cool.
Yeah, we followed it up on Wednesday with actions against Atos. We did a big picket outside of the Atos office. Now, what Atos is a company basically employed by the government to get people off of disability benefit by any means necessary.
Bad things.
They actually get paid on a results basis. The more people they get off, the more targets they hit, the more money they get. So they're not at all, you know, objective. They're really biased. They want to get as many people off of it as they can. And yeah, and they use quite a lot of basically tricks to get people off of it. You know, they say stuff like, can you sit and watch TV for 4 hours? And people would be like, yeah. And they'd be like, you know, part-time job in an office then, because you can sit and stare at a computer screen.
Yeah.
And so what we're doing is we're talking to people that are going in to be assessed and just giving them, like, just like, these are 10 pointers you really have to watch out for. And just telling them, like, you know, keep fighting, like, appeal with the decisions and things like that. And also bringing attention to basically what the government and the Atlas group are doing to people with a, like, quite public picket. And
awesome.
So, I mean, it always feels worthwhile, even if it's just, you know, the 20 people you spoke to going in might not lose their disability benefits. So
that's, like, massive. That's,
you know,
still massive,
quite a, always good action to do on that basis.
And where's their office?
It's in a place called Flowers Hill, which is out in Brislington.
Okay.
So it's a little bit out of the way, but there's plenty of buses going up there and you can cycle it, so, you know, people manage to turn out, so you've had a reasonable turnout for it.
Nice one.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah, definitely. And I think that's, yeah, that is just kind of the quite meaningful, I mean, the cuts target the most vulnerable in society, right? So that's kind of one of the more meaningful things that you can do, I think, really, in sort of most important places to be putting our energies and things as well.
Yeah.
So it does impact, like, I think, you know, if you're able-bodied and relatively okay and privileged and things, you don't really notice, you know, maybe it's all working, but then, you know, if you're in a more vulnerable situation, then you're on the front lines of what's going on and things, and as it's affecting women and children more as well, and those kinds of things, like, it's sort of all wrapped up into these other systems that screw people over, so,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's wicked.
Yeah.
What else did we do?
Thursday was potentially, like, the most fun action for us ourselves as activists. It was an anti-workfare flash mob.
Yes.
We all appeared in Primark, unbeknownst at the time to Primark security, started leafleting, and we had three people dressed in black and white striped prison outfits who just started going to work in Primark, saying they were there as part of the workfare scheme. And basically everything the security did made it worse. They ended up dragging them away to screams of, don't beat me again, I'll work harder, I'm only here on the workfare scheme. And then they didn't know what to do, like, should they carry on dragging people away? And so that was quite good, and handed out a lot of leaflets, got into a lot of chats with people, and to the point we actually completely ran out of leaflets and had to go get more copies before we hit the next target.
Nice.
The next target ended up being Holland and Barrett, and we actually got into this really long discussion with the manager.
Yeah.
And it turns out he was on the workfare scheme at Holland and Barrett before he became the manager. So obviously he's got his view of it, where it was like he couldn't get a job and it did manage to get him a job. But we were like talking to him about, like, yeah, but, you know, surely you should be able to get a job without being required to work for 2 months for free.
Yes.
And managed to tease the statistic out of him that actually only one in three people at Holland and Barrett do get a job at the end of it. The other ones just work for free, don't get a job. Mm-hmm. Some good things came out of it. He basically said that they, as far as Holland and Barrett are aware themselves, no one on the scheme is under threat of sanctions, and no one on the scheme is there against their will, and everyone that is on the scheme wants to be there for whatever reason they want to do free work for. Basically explained that quite often the job centre aren't pushing it to people that way, like, even if it's a supposedly voluntary scheme, they can still be threats of, oh, we'll put you on a much worse mandatory scheme, or, oh, it will still affect your benefits. So basically what we're going to try and get them to do is release an official statement saying they will completely pull out the scheme if they find that anyone on the scheme is there against their will.
Mm-hmm.
Which we reckon would be, like, a positive step forward. Mm. And then we'll see what comes of that. I mean, we've written to them now. We got the address of the head office and that manager, and he said he'd chase it up if we don't get a response. So, I mean, in terms of what can come out of a day of action, that seemed relatively positive.
And how was the rest of the week then?
The rest of the week we had Friday was a noise demo against a supplier and contractor that's working at the Hinkley nuclear site.
Mm-hmm.
It was organised with Southwest Against Nuclear and Stop Hinkley C. It was out in Almondsbury, which is just about Bristol. It's got a BS postcode. So they managed to get a good group of people out there. And it's not a company that's used to having this sort of attention. It's not, like, I think it's called Hydrock. It's not, like, a well-known name. It's just that for some reason, EDF Energy, who are building this new nuclear reactor, decided to show off their local contacts by publishing a list of all the local companies that work for them.
Right.
Despite the fact they knew that people were protesting against them. So yeah, there was this big noise demo. The company shut the gates so they couldn't get their deliveries for the day. The people inside couldn't really work because it was a very noisy noise demo. So yeah, all in all, we got like really good feedback from that as well, and it seemed to be a quite effective action, a sort of new tactic for the Stop Nuclear campaign, sort of taking its cue from sort of some of the animal rights stuff of like targeting contractors that work with the main company and trying to force them out to as a sort of secondary targeting thing.
Yeah, the demos like that, noise demos need to be kept up. Like, they're almost useless as a one-off. You just need to kind of keep up the pressure.
And how about today?
Today was, it was supposed to be, well, it was the biggest event of the week, the idea being that most people couldn't really afford to pull that many sickies or not turn up for work or, you know, skip whatever they had to do on the day. So it was a Saturday one. A lot of the nitty-gritty organising was done by the Anti-Cuts Alliance because they're quite used to organising sort of marches, and they really wanted to focus on the NHS. They didn't want the campaign against the privatisation of the NHS to go away just because the bill had passed. Mm-hmm. And they didn't want to be like some of the previous struggles where as soon as the bill was passed in Parliament, everything fades away. Mm-hmm. Like the student struggle kind of took a nosedive afterwards and it didn't last that long, and struggles really do need to be kept up because the government just seems to think that it can just batten down the hatches, weather the storm, and people will disappear. So it's really good to sort of keep that out on the streets and keep that fresh in people's mind, especially since they've got strikes coming up on the 10th of May. So it sort of added a bit of energy into the strikes, and hopefully more people will go along to the picket lines on the 10th of May. If you want to look that up, if you can spare some time on the 10th of May in the morning, get down to that.
Like, we've just had the vote for the mayor, and that's like another example of just people not understanding and like being apathetic as a result. Like, Bristol didn't have its local elections on the same day like the other cities had, who voted no. So as a result, no one went to the vote. The only people who went to the vote were people who cared strongly, therefore people who were like, yes, I want the mayor. And as a result, we've now got a mayor that was voted for by, so what, 24% turnout. Just over half of them actually said yes to having a mayor. So what, like, 13% of Bristol like said they wanted a mayor. And now we've basically got, like, what's... nothing like no more than a local dictator, like someone who by themselves, and they only have to elect a cabinet of two people, so three people in Bristol make all the decisions.
Yeah,
it's like we've basically elected a dictator.
Yeah,
it's ridiculous.
Yeah, there was some where I'm from, there was a bus strike a few years ago in the middle of winter, which like is like minus 20, minus 30 degree weather, and like it's also everything is much more spread out and things, and so there was a bus strike. The mayor basically wanted to, a la Margaret Thatcher, break the bus drivers union and things, so the strike went on for months and months and months. And like essentially if you didn't live next to where you worked and you didn't have a car, you would be stuck like either carpooling or like walking for hours to get to where you had to go. Like from where I live to get into town was a 3-hour walk, and so unless you cycled in the winter, which obviously not everybody does, not everybody feels safe doing, then you couldn't essentially get around. And it's like the mayor felt quite comfortable letting this go on for months while people struggled. And when you think of, like, you know, I say this from, I complain and I'm pretty able-bodied, but if you think of people who are less able-bodied and things, it's just quite outrageous to think that system was sort of, you know, transport was taken away from people because this mayor had a vendetta against the bus drivers union and things. Yeah.
But the new ring of the new swathe of mayors coming in now, the coalitions have put like legislation together and didn't put in all the clauses that were in the original ones. So there's no clause for the mayor to be. Taken out of office if they're crap. Like, as soon as they're in for 4 years and they can do whatever they want. And there's also no clause. Like, I think two or three towns and cities at the same time as us, we voted them in, voted to, like, disband the whole mayor thing because it wasn't working. Mm-hmm. That clause isn't in Bristol's one, so now we're going to have the mayor forever. Actually, there's an event that we missed off our list on Friday, Bristol Radical History Group did a presentation on the Haymarket Affair in Chicago.
Oh, cool.
So that was, I can't remember the year, 1886, May 4th. And that was basically something that kind of started the May Day celebrations, was this, the events that happened. And if you didn't get along to that talk, then definitely go and look up the Haymarket. It's called the Haymarket Affair. Yeah, they did a really good talk about that. Really interesting, particularly how the state tried to celebrate the policeman that died. Basically, one policeman was killed in a bomb blast by a bomb that was allegedly thrown by an anarchist. Six or seven other police officers died, and they found out through the bullets that they found lodged in their bodies that other policemen killed them. In the confusion of the bomb blast and the darkness and the chaos, the police are shooting each other. So there was a big sort of, they raised money and they built this big statue of the first policeman that died, that's in just near the Haymarket. And it was brilliant. They said that while it was being built, they tried to blow it up, anarchists tried to blow it up twice. It then got built, and they sort of vandalised it and sabotaged it countless times. And then the Weather Underground blew it up. They raised the money, put it back there again. Weather Underground blew it up again a year later. So twice in a year they blew it up. Then a disgruntled tram driver sped his tram up so much it came off the rails, and he crashed it into the statue, knocking it over. And they were saying, they were trying to work out how to protect this statue. So one idea was to build a large plastic dome over it so people would stop blowing it up. The second one was to build hundreds and hundreds of fiberglass replicas, so when they got blown up, they just replaced it with another one. And in the end, they had to give up, and they moved the statue originally in front of the police station. I think for a few years they had a police officer on 24-hour guard watching this statue, and then they were like, this is pointless, I know, we'll move it next to the police station so
genius,
we can see it.
Yeah.
And then they moved it inside.
So you're gonna, when you come in, you're sitting down next to the statue.
It's brilliant. And there was still just a plinth left, and they were still targeting the plinth, trying to blow up the plinth. And in the end, to make people happy, they've put a statue to the people who were there, the workers who were there, who were fighting. It was all about the 8-hour day and the police repression of that. So finally you've got a statue that deserved to be in that spot. But it's a really interesting story, so
yeah, wow,
found out about
that's
it.
Awesome.
I was also, before I came, I was checking online for stuff about May Day, and I also saw that an interview with Noam Chomsky saying that they were, I can't remember the name of it, but they, in the United States, they made May 1st, instead of it being International Workers' Day or something, they made it some kind of Patriot Day, and then they even renamed it under Reagan as something else even more jingoistic and horrible. So it's just they really tried to sort of squash the memory of what actually happened.
They want to do that here. They've already said, it was in the news quite recently, how they're saying, oh, we've got far too many bank holidays, it costs us £6 billion a day.
Right.
Even though the economic thing is completely irrelevant, because countries like Germany have far more bank holidays than we do, and they're far more productive. One of the holidays they want to get rid of is the May Day bank holiday. And they do want to replace it with one of the ideas is a Trafalgar Day, Patriot Day, England Day, whatever. Which is Mr. Cameron's plans are anyway. So bollocks to that.
Well,
basically,
hopefully he won't be around too much longer. He's got Boris to take his place, maybe. With all the commentators are saying on the news, if you believe them.
If I get elected Conservative Party leader, I promise to abolish the entire electoral system.
All right.
Vote Boris.
We're good.
Cool.
Thanks, guys. Thank you.
Cheers,
yeah,
cool.
Guys.
Cool to be here.
Thank you.
Cool. Okay. Wow. And
great.
Yeah, that was good.
Yeah. Ken and Boris, they didn't have uncivil words that whole time.
Yeah, shocker. <that's> cool. We've got a tune now, which is you got to fight
for your right
to Beastie
party.
Boys.
Cool.
Now, boys, don't get into any trouble while Mommy and Daddy are gone. And don't make a mess.
Do you like parties?
Yeah.
We can invite all our friends and have soda and pie.
Yeah!
I hope no bad people show up.
So now we're going to go to a quick clip about Sacco and Vanzetti, two anarchists that have been mentioned previously in the show that were murdered by the state. And it's just, it's interesting. It's part of our history. Good to know.
There's a poster here about them, isn't
there? I think there probably is, yeah. Speaking of posters at Cabele, the Art Collective has, you may have seen if you come into Cabele in the past month, the Just Seeds art exhibition at Cabele, and now the Art Collective is selling the posters for a whopping £2 a piece donation. I'm sure if you want to give more, they will definitely accept more. I think this Cabele's art curator will not be burning any of the artwork.
To protest, yes. Yeah. Against cuts, yes. Yeah. Let's not do that.
But if you're interested, get in touch with the Art Collective and
£2.
Buy a poster.
That's awesome.
Bargain.
Mm.
Definitely. Cool. So now we're going to go and learn more about, how do you say it? Anarchist history moments with Radio Cabaret, Sacco and Vanzetti.
Oh, ho, Sacco, Sacco. Ho, ho, Niccolo, Sacco. Ho, ho, Sacco, Sacco. I just want to sing your name. Sacco, 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 Sacco. Ho, ho, Sacco, Niccolo. Sacco, Sacco. I just want to sing your name.
Ho. Beginning with the First World War, an alliance of the Departments of Justice, Labor, and Immigration initiated a campaign of repression. Agents broke into the homes of suspected radicals, arrested them, and seized their possessions. Many were deported. Most of the victims were foreigners, usually Russians, Italians, and Jews.
Two men stand out as targets of the anti-radical campaign. They were Italian-born, residents of Boston for many years, respectable workers and dedicated anarchists. They were attempting to dispose of some anarchist leaflets when they were arrested on a charge of armed robbery and murder. Their names were Nicola Sacco and Bartolomeo Vanzetti.
Oh, Sacco Vanzetti. Oh, Sacco Vanzetti. Sacco, Sacco Vanzetti. I just want to sing your name.
The state's evidence was flimsy, and the witnesses for the prosecution gave confused and contradictory testimony. Sacco and Vanzetti proclaimed their innocence, but they were convicted and sentenced to death. Appeal after appeal was denied. The case became an international cause. Marches and defense efforts were organized worldwide.
But on August 23, 1927, the state of Massachusetts, which had condemned Sacco and Vanzetti as violent and dangerous men, mobilized 500 heavily armed policemen to suppress protests and electrocuted the two Boston anarchists.
Okay, cool. Now we're going to go to a somewhat controversial song with Ken and Boris and myself. And Centuria. Combat Wombat, awesome Australian hip hop. They are the Australian Autonomads, but a bit more like back in the day. And they have a line in this song, which is, get those animals off those horses. And we all know what they're talking about, but we were just discussing whether it's speciesist or not to be referring to police as animals in this way. If it's a negative thing, are they talking about animals being negative or less than human? I personally think that they're commenting on the fact that the horses didn't consent to have a human on them, and also that we're referring to humans as animals, which I think generally we should. Thoughts?
However, I think there is, some may see it, not everybody, but some, some may see it that using the word animal in a negative way to imply something bad is sort of, you know, looking down on animals, maybe not so good. But, you know, it's just one argument that's out there. And things like this argument about calling the police pigs and things.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, that's totally different. Because you're, like, using that word in a negative way. I don't think by calling the police animals. I don't know. Maybe it's contextual.
Yeah, yeah.
But I think they're drawing a comparison between the fact that the horse is an animal and the human is an animal. So they're saying, get those animals off those horses.
Yeah, yeah, no, it could be a way of trying to switch around the way that we see things. You know.
And we also know from the Radio Cabaret Trivia Night that the word pig doesn't actually derive from the animal pig. It means pig iron, although that probably derives from an animal.
Somewhere along
something.
The way.
So, bad iron. Maybe there's some species. Okay, there's a history of speciesism in the word pig for cops, but it's not referencing a pig as a policeman directly.
But, you know, if you have lots of thoughts on it, why not get in touch with Radio Cabaret and, you know,
we could start a little chat.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Yeah. Help us understand this one.
Help, please, help us.
Yes.
So the song is Police Brutality, which is just happening at the moment. There were horses at the May Day in Bristol thing. There were horses fucking at the EDL march in Brighton. There's probably horses in Luton. And they stand on your feet, damn it. Wear steel caps.
They do.
Prepared. Fucking hell. Yeah.
They're not light, those horses.
No, they don't. And because they can train them to, like, stamp really hard. And when they turn around, they stamp on your feet real hard. Fucking fuck. So we're going to go that...
Fuck.
Well, I had my steel cap boots on, thank goodness. And it becomes that thing of, like, do I wear my trainers where I can run fast, or do I wear my boots where I can't run as fast, but I have, like, toe protection?
Yeah,
And when I had my feet stood on by horses several times, it was like, thank God I'm wearing this now, otherwise my feet would be busted.
Yeah.
So, yes, we're going to hear that song, Police Brutality, by Combat Wombat. Cool. Song controversy.
Yeah, controversy. Yes.
So now we're going to go to another anarchist history moment with Radio Cavalli, featuring Howard Zinn speaking about the Ludlow strike.
It was early springtime and the strike was on. It drove us miners out of doors, out from the houses that the company owned. We moved into tents up at old Ludlow.
I was interested because I'd been a shipyard worker from the age of 18 to the age of 21 and had joined a union. And one day I heard a song by Woody Guthrie called The Ludlow Massacre. A dark, haunting, powerful song. And that led me to look in a library about this event, which nobody had ever mentioned in any of my history courses, which no textbook of mine had ever mentioned.
I made a run for the children, but a firewall stopped me. 13 children died from your guns. We told the Colorado governor to phone the president. Tell him call off his National Guard. But the National Guard belonged to the governor, so he didn't try so very hard. I was worried bad about my children, soldiers guarding.
And the strike was lost. You know, the miners had to go back to work. But the event had a tremendous effect, I think, on lots of people around the country. Anybody who read about the Ludlow Massacre, anybody who heard about it, was bound to be affected by it.
I said, God bless the Mine Workers Union. Then I hung my head and cried.
Great, so we're back, and the month of May, if you feel like you've been listening to Radio Cavelli and there's been a theme of May Day, you are correct, but all is not over. There's lots more coming up, coming your way. So on May 27th, Take Back the Flour, it's a mass action against genetically modified wheat. So it's happening, where is it happening?
It's out near Heathrow, I think. Oh, just outside London, I think.
So it's happening, 30 minute, just outside London, so it's meet at Rothamsted Park in Happendon. But basically, check it out, check out their website, which is www.taketheflourback.org. So check it out, but it's quite important. This is like the second wave of GM food that we're seeing now. We gotta protect the gains that we've made and hopefully keep them, you know, further get rid of genetically modified food, because who wants that?
Not me
either.
Also coming up, we've got Smash Edo, which is Summer of Resistance.
It's all summer.
I don't know explicitly what is happening soon.
I don't know what's happening soon, but if you go to smashedo.org.uk, I'm sure you can find out.
There was something recently, wasn't there? A noise demo outside a thing in Brighton?
Yes, there was recently a noise demo outside outside Edo.
Someone got arrested, yes, and someone got arrested for having a cowbell, who was playing a cowbell, and they got arrested. That's what I remember.
God. Goodness.
Yes.
This animal abuse theme.
Yes.
Going.
That's right. It's a theme. Mm-hmm. We've also got on the 12th of May at the Plough in Easton is a gig, the Bastard Squad Collective, which is a benefit for two people arrested after the illegal eviction of a squat in Easton last year. All money raised will go towards paying court costs. Any money left over will go towards squatting and legal defence groups. So we've got Kilner Boy, Private Gain, the Migraines, mm-hmm. and that's it at the Plough Easton on 12th of May. That's Saturday, and it's £4.
Nice.
Aw, the community bakery.
How cool is that?
Dude, I made this flyer.
Dude, it's amazing.
Thank you. Well, I co-made it. I won't take all the kudos.
It's still amazing. Great joint effort.
Yes, thank you. We're trying to get a bakery started in Cavelli. You know this.
Yeah, it's amazing.
We're trying to like do it so that then there's bread every Saturday morning. So we're looking for folks to like come and help us bake on Friday night. And it's all sourdough and it's all really yummy and there's lots of seeds. And then we just sell them for like £1 or £2.
Hmm.
Which is pretty good.
Yeah, good
dare
deal.
I say. So yeah, bread making Skillshare, and we're going to try and do some bagels coming up soon as well. We've got From the Left Bank to the West Bank, which is a benefit for Circus to Palestine, which is on the 12th of May. Uh-oh, Clashage.
Oh,
which is the same night as the Kilner Boy Bastard Squad. All right, choose sides, people. Mm-hmm. It's free entry. Oh, well, it's free entry from 12 to 6 on the 12th of May, and it's at the Left Bank.
Oh, so you could do that first. Then go to the Kilner Boy gig.
Correct, yes.
That is your Saturday sorted.
And then it's £5 later, so that's all circusy things. And also on Monday, May 14th, the, what are they called, Bristol Feminist Network and Bristol Indie Media are doing an evening showcasing women art stuff. So get along to that. It's £4. Did I say that with a tone just then?
A little bit of tone, yes.
I don't mean to.
Women and art. I feel like I said it with a tone as well. Yeah.
Why am I doing that? There's a women's like comedy night coming up soon, and I'm well excited about that. Why am I not excited about this? I don't know. It's on the Cube.
Cover the picture.
Yeah, maybe it's probably. Yeah, I think that's what's doing.
We're just trying to cover the picture up, and then we will feel better about the event.
At ease. Mm-hmm. So £4 on Monday the 14th. Reading Circle at Cavelli Library. That's awesome. Which is on the third Thursday, so you can remember it because it's kind of like alliteration. Is that right?
Third Thursday. Yes. Yeah.
And you just bring a book that you're enjoying or not enjoying, and then just read a bit of that aloud, and then people can chat about it if you wish. So it's a good space if you're not reading anything and you want to be inspired to read something, come along and check that out.
And also just a sort of bit of a plug for the Library Collective, who are doing an amazing job, like everybody at Cavelli is. But they're like, the library looks great all the time, and there's loads of wicked books. There's all kinds of stuff. Every time we record, I just look around and I just wish I had more time. Whoa, okay, Mumia film showing. So my Imprisoned My Whole Life. It's a documentary film highlighting the case of Mumia Abu-Jamal, a father, journalist, and revolutionary. He's also an innocent man on death row, but however, I think he has actually been moved off of death row. We'll be showing at Hamilton House above the canteen May 17th at 7:15, so check
and
it out.
And it's £3.
Yeah, £3.
Mm-hmm. Last little plug, we've got a BDS benefit, which is
Bristol Defendant Solidarity.
Why did I forget that? We've got Piss on Authority, Ephemeral Fetus. What the hell does that mean?
I need a dictionary, I don't know.
Disfortune, I can't read. I'm going to say this again. Piss on Authority, Ephemeral Fetus, Disfortune at the Red Lion in St. George, which is on May 19th. Sorry, I keep misreading dates. It's a benefit for Bristol Defendant Solidarity. It's £4, 8 p.m. Piss on Authority, I like that name.
Yeah, totally.
And Cop on Fire. They're probably my two favourite band names, I think.
Nice.
I like how, direct and exact they are.
Yes.
There's no messing around.
Yeah. No, definitely not.
Cool, I think that's everything.
Yes, I do believe that is everything.
Woo.
Yeah, great.
See y'all.
Thanks, guys.